Hey, welcome to Muggle Musings, the podcast. This is episode one. I'm one of your hosts, Avery Owen. I'm joined by
Angelina Beretta,
Tim Lloyd,
Juan Lopez.
And today we're going to be talking about theme and subterfuge through chapters 30 through 33 of J.K. Rowling's The Order of the Phoenix.
Okay, here we have a great example of subterfuge. Is when Hagrid approaches the trio to take care of his brother Rob. This is significant because he intentionally deceived the school administration for the benefit of his family. What do you guys think if Hagrid's actions are justifiable?
I'd say that his actions are justifiable because, it is subterfuge and it is deception. But at the same time, he's doing it for a good reason. You know, he wants to take care of his family. And it's not a huge effect. I mean, it's a little bit of unsafety, I guess, for the kids. Huge monster trolling around the woods. But, you know, he's got him chained up.
Yeah, and I think everyone sort of has a soft spot for family. So it's kind of like an emotional thing, which in some way makes it justifiable.
Yeah. I think it's pretty justifiable because, one, he puts him so far back in the middle of the woods that when it talks about later in the chapter wherein Harry looks back in the forest and almost sees birds flying way off in the distance, that is a long, long way away. And the ropes that he was tied to didn't do a whole lot, as we'll see later, because, he tore them off. Mm-hmm. But I also think that the school is now totally corrupted and it's not what it used to be anymore also. So it's not like he's actually discrediting the school or something, because it's all different now.
Right. It's justifiable against the school, but he is, like, potentially putting Harry, Hermione, and Ron in danger. So then again, you can think of it that way.
That's true.
Yeah.
I think it's also interesting. Sorry. I think it's also interesting the way he kind of played. It's Harry's version of good and evil all over again. Like, you know. Some things are justifiable if it's in the interest of his family, but if it's not in the interest of people around him, he's like, that's terrible and you shouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's true. It's
pretty black and white in weird ways.
Yeah. Which doesn't sound very justifiable if you think about it, because I feel like justice has to do with many people, and if you just base justice off of your opinion, then it doesn't really work, I guess. It's in a way corrupt.
Yeah.
Because it's totally biased to what you think.
I think we're changing our minds, guys.
I don't think
it's justified anymore.
I think that Hagrid's actions were justifiable, but I don't think Harry's.
I don't know because it's not. I don't think Hagrid's stuff is justifiable because, like, don't put kids in danger.
This could be a gray area.
That's it. This is a gray area. Like, it's don't put kids in danger, even if you've got a giant brother. He survived without you.
I guess that's true, but at the same time, like, if we decide that Harry's all cool and can handle all this stuff that he's handled in the past, clearly he can handle a giant.
Yeah. It's true.
And not to go to go all PETA on you or anything, but, like, he's a giant, which, like, they talk about. It's, like, important that he's not a human, but he's a complex creature, you know. And they're just kind of tying him up, which is, like, fine if it was really, like, you know, one of the Nifflers or, like, whatever the other magical creatures are. But he's, like, not a human, but a giant. Yeah. You can't just tie up your brother.
I mean, I did it.
It's a little inhumane.
A couple times.
Not for days on end, and then leave him for 12-year-olds? How old are they? 15?
Apparently
I think they're 15 now.
15?
They can't drive,
You can't tie up your brother and leave them to 15-year-olds. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Okay, guys, so next we're going to dive into Harry and how he uses subterfuge to deceive his friends as well as Snape when it comes to practicing his occlumency lessons. It all starts when Dumbledore instructs Harry to receive occlumency lessons to close his mind and shut off these visions he's having of Voldemort. However, during one of his occlumency lessons, Harry sneaks a peek into the Pensieve containing Snape's secret memories and is caught by Snape, who then refuses to continue with the lessons. Harry's glad for this because he not only despises Snape, but also wants to finally finish his dream or vision of the door down the long corridor at the Department of Mysteries. So Harry's been not only not practicing occlumency, but he has been lying about it to Ron, Hermione, and Snape. So Harry deceives his friends in order to see these visions. What do you guys think? Like, I feel like that's pretty deceitful.
Yeah, I'd certainly say so. That's definitely deceitful. I think it's interesting to see that I think there's a lash out, kind of, because you can tell that, like, people are getting more concerned in his, like, everyday life. So, like, Snape's breathing down his neck about
occlumency?
The lessons.
Hello.
There you go.
and Hermione is, like, nagging him 24/7 about, like, everything in the world. And still, you know, people are suddenly becoming interested in his voice, which, like, the whole book, they're not interested. And now that he's suddenly interested in what they're saying, he's drawing into himself instead of actually talking.
I mean, do we think that he's doing this for the right reasons? Like, he's lying about practicing something that's really, like, he should be closing his mind off to Voldemort because it's dangerous, and he's lying about it, which kind of makes him seem a little edgy, I'd say.
It's teenager angst.
No, I guess that's it.
I don't think he's right, though, in doing it at all, because it says in the book, like, he wants to keep watching what's going on intentionally. Like, he wants to know what's going on. So his, like, deceit is purely for his own benefit. He's just thinking about himself, I feel like, and not thinking about the whole span of things.
Right. It's like curiosity, you know?
Yeah.
Like, right, like a child's curiosity.
Yeah.
A child, he's only 15. That's not very old.
Yeah.
He's like a little baby.
Yeah, he's not trying to further the cause or anything.
No,
he's not planning
at all
on telling Dumbledore about what's behind the door.
I think, I'm going to interrupt you.
No, no, go ahead.
I think that he, in a way, enjoys the influence and leverage he has on everybody as a whole, and especially his close friends. In a way, I think that having that almost respect, and if not respect, like attention, is something that he really enjoys. I think that the book doesn't really flesh out, but as like a male dude that's been 15 before, I can say that there's definitely been times where I've like had information or known something that people haven't and that they wanted to know, and I really enjoyed having that over them. And which was not good, obviously, but I think that that's definitely.
So we think that he's keeping it a secret because he likes knowing something that they don't know, or because he's scared for them to know that he wants to know something
both.
That they
I
don't want him to know.
Can I just ask, Juan, as a male dude, do you also agree with Tim?
In some way, I'm going to say.
Yeah, I think it's certainly a lot of questions about why maybe he's just being a 15-year-old
male dude
and Ron likes to keep things close to the chest just because, you know, for so long people were interested in him, and then he got his story out there and people were like, I guess he was telling the truth anyway,
and now he has like all these secrets.
I think it's also pretty easy because Snape was like, okay, well, get out of my classroom.
And
I don't
took
want to
advantage
talk
of
it. Yeah.
He's like, oh,
I
sweet.
Will say,
because they hate each other anyways.
Kind of like a weird flick of, It was a weird moment where it was like clear he was a little bit distraught about not going up the lessons.
Occlumency?
Yes, the lessons. Because, you know, when he's kicking him out, obviously he's distraught because Snape's yelling at him and stuff like that. But at the same time, he's like, well, hold on, I'm sorry.
And also because it was like Dumbledore's orders, and I'm kind of surprised that he was so chill with, like, going against Dumbledore's wishes.
I think maybe because Dumbledore has been, like, ignoring him the whole book.
Right. And he's still stuck on that.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to bounce on over to one of the more subterfuge-y characters. And that is Voldemort. So I think one of the most important portions of the entire book in terms of subterfuge is, you know, when Voldemort places the vision of Sirius in Harry's mind to get him to, you know, come to the ministry. And it's significant because Harry's just dreaming and he has this dream of Sirius, his godfather, being tortured. And really it's just a ruse to lure him to the ministry. But what I'm interested in is, what do you guys think the significance of Sirius being the person tortured is? And in consequence, do you think the firsthand experience exacerbates Harry's panic?
I definitely think that it was intentional for Voldemort to choose Sirius to torture. He knows Harry's connection. If Voldemort has the same connection with Harry that Harry has with Voldemort, then he definitely knows how he feels about Sirius and knows that he's basically considered family. I mean, he's better than his real family that's left, so mm-hmm. I think he definitely knew mm-hmm. that would be a trigger.
And also, I'm interested in how you guys think Hermione is kind of portrayed in this and what her impact has in this chapter, because she immediately afterwards, you know, Harry's like, we gotta go see Sirius, he's at the ministry. And the minute, you know, he says that, you know, Hermione's like, okay, listen, this could be a trap. Everybody knows your minds are connected. Let's just check Umbridge's fireplace real quick.
I think, honestly, Hermione is one of the only intelligent people throughout the entire series.
That's the team.
Like, and I'm sure that's going to frustrate a lot of people when I say that, but I seriously think, first of all, Harry is just, he's just retarded. He's dumb. He's not, retarded is the wrong word. He's a fool.
Irrational.
He's
irrational.
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 Yeah. And
politically correct podcast. We did not use that word.
I don't want to offend anybody, but he doesn't know what he's doing. Ron is just Ron, and out of the students, Hermione seems to be the only one with a well-rounded opinion
yeah.
and voice and mind, and I think she has a very good understanding of the whole situation,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like the book doesn't give her credit enough, nor does any of the characters in the book. And I think if they just listened to her, the whole situation could have been different.
Yeah, I think that because there's no... So I think because Hermione doesn't have that emotional connection with Sirius the way that Harry does, she's able to think rationally and kind of like think of possibilities outside the realm of like just, oh my God, you know, he's about to be killed. She's able to be like, okay, let's think this through. Like, but it has to do with the fact that she's not emotionally attached like Harry is.
I think that's true. And I think that's important for, you know, Hermione's character development is that she isn't necessarily attached to this wizarding world. Like, all these people, all they know
yeah,
is the
true.
Wizarding world. Like,
yeah.
you talk about Ron
mm-hmm.
and his dad doesn't, you know, muggle items and artifacts are just,
right.
like, such common things that, like, to Hermione, she's like, all I know, all I've ever known is the real world, real school. The normal parents, or muggle parents, excuse me. And so when she's thrown into this world, you know, it's interesting to her and she loves it, but at the same time, she doesn't have a real connection the way the others do, that they were born and raised in this society.
Right. I think that kind of gives her, like, an upper hand in the fact of she's
mm-hmm.
able to think so, like, structured.
Rationally.
Yeah. Like, she has that, a different mindset than everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And while she does blend well with the wizarding world, she's also able to bring in like common sense from the muggle world.
Yeah,
I think
petition to start a podcast just about Hermione.
Yeah.
I feel like that's down. Our next episode is
Hermione. Hermione the hero. And the intelligence.
Hermione and the intelligence. That's the name of our next podcast.
That's catchy.
Stay tuned. We'll keep you with updates.
Okay, moving right along. We're going to talk about Professor Umbridge.
Ooh.
So, in chapter 32, we learn that Umbridge is the one who sent the Dementors to attack Harry in Little Winging. Surprise, surprise. We also learn that Cornelius Fudge actually had nothing to do with it. So all this time, you know, I'm thinking that he's the sketchy one and he's the one who did all this. But in reality, Professor Umbridge is, she's a lot worse than I thought she was. So
she's an evil little lady.
Yeah, she's totally evil. And she actually deceives Harry. She deceives the ministry. She deceives a lot of people. But I would say, even though she's deceiving the ministry, they're actually the ones who are benefiting from it.
Sure.
So, that's kind of crazy because they had nothing to do with it. But they're the ones kind of like reaping the benefits of the whole thing.
I think that was the best subterfuge out of the whole book, possibly.
Yeah.
Because nobody knew. Like, it was a total drop mic moment that, like, had not been touched entire book. And we're, like, we totally forget about the fact that when we first read that chapter, in the beginning, we questioned, where did these come from? And that answer was not answered for so long that we forgot about it. And then Rowling drops the answer, and it's just like mind-blowing.
Literally doesn't drop the answer until page 747. We're about to do a little in-text quote right here.
747 pages later.
Yeah. So, you know, we have no idea. And during this whole, like, thing that's going on in Umbridge's office, she, like, just kind of blurts out that she's the one that sent the Dementors, and everyone is like, what? Like, Fudge didn't know about this? And she says, he never knew I ordered Dementors after Potter last summer, but he was delighted to be given the chance to expel him all the same.
That is true, because she does point out on multiple occasions, she's like, nobody was willing to do anything about it, but I'm going to do something. You know, she's very proud of it.
Right.
It's a good exhibition of, I think you know, there's so many divisions that the Sorting Hat talks about within the school, but just on a larger scale of the whole book, you know, the whole time you're recognizing division in school and, I was going to say state. School and state, that's what we'll call it. No, school and the ministry. But there's divisions in the ministry. You know, Fudge still doesn't know about this. And
right.
Umbridge is acting out. And you're right, the ministry is just reaping the benefits of Umbridge's subterfuge.
And that's crazy, because this whole time I kind of thought Umbridge was literally following Fudge's command, like, blindly. And I just thought she was, like, this crazy cat lady who had nothing better to do but be psycho. But then out, she was like, totally.
Sorry, I guess that's not the thing that I was supposed to argue for, but I just think she was a cat person.
That begs the interesting question, because it's never mentioned in the book.
Do you think she's a cat person?
But
definitely.
According to the movie, which some people also will be frustrated by, her office is filled.
He does talk about a painting full of cats.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Here's what I want to say about this, and I feel like we should just leave it at that. Is that I feel like, as a cat person, I feel a little villainized by this conversation.
My cat ran away. I'm biased.
I have a cat, and it's great because it sits there and goes to sleep and does nothing. It doesn't care about anything that happens.
Unpopular opinion, dogs ain't that great.
Opinion, dogs are a man's best friend.
No, here's the thing. Listen. I want an animal.
What about woman's best friend?
No, I want an animal that works for my
male
attention.
Segregation.
I don't want you to just like me. I want you to make me work for your approval. And that's why cats are better. But a whole different point.
What?
Anyways.
I love my dog.
You want them to make you work for your approval?
Yes, dogs just blindly
that's
love
so
you.
Weird.
They do. They're like, oh,
it's unconditional.
Why?
You already deal with enough stress from other people.
Here's the tip.
Unconditional.
A lot of
who else's love is unconditional? Sorry.
Jesus.
Just saying.
Are you equating dogs to Jesus?
Wow. First, we're, oh my gosh, there are so many topics off There's, of this right now.
We're on a tangent.
Next podcast is it's tune gonna, in it's next go episode.
From Hermione to male and female segregation to religion.
There's a lot going on.
We keep it very entertaining and
it's
very
true.
Real.
These are pressing topics.
Is
Umbridge a cat lady? And I think that's
our
cat's to know.
Really women's
and
best friend.
Cats,
just Avery's.
Exclusively Avery. Avery, friend to all cats. But not if they like
but
me immediately.
Screw
dogs.
I want
to gain their respect. I don't want them to respect me.
See, I do understand that, because for me, I sometimes have to feel like whether or not you think I need to prove myself to you, I need to prove myself to you.
Yeah. It's the same way, you know, boy bands? Oh my gosh.
Jonas
this
Brothers.
Long. Yeah. I don't know what that was.
No idea.
Listen, the way boy bands are like, we love you. And you're like, you don't even know me. It's the same thing with dogs where they're like, we love you. And you don't even know me.
I
met you
20
seconds ago. Exactly. And there are multiple accounts where like dogs like jump up and like are friendly to murderers. Like you think dogs are going to protect
I don't like where this is going.
All right.
I don't know, because
In Sync or Backstreet Boys?
I'm
seen Black Panther lately?
I'm gonna leave this to episode 3. I feel like we've certainly made a lot of leeway.
Get your popcorn and tune back in.
Popcorn. I'll choose a pizza. I think that another great example of subterfuge in the book is when Harry tries to warn Snape about Sirius being tortured, and he tries to warn him by speaking in code. This is when they're in Umbridge's office, and Umbridge caught Harry speaking in the fire to Sirius's house elf. When Harry is caught by them, they're all being interrogated by Umbridge. And Umbridge calls for Snape to give her a potion to make Harry tell the truth. And as Snape gets up there and is about to leave, Harry shouts, "They've got Padfoot in the place that it is hidden." And
did you have to shout it?
It did add to the
fact. He did. Okay.
You're right. Anyway.
Anyways, so he explains, he yells to Snape this sentence. And it's a great use of subterfuge because this language that he uses, the vocabulary that he has, is unknown to Umbridge and the rest of the Slytherin students that are there. And so it's a great way to get it across. And it's a language that very few people understand, but Snape does understand and so is able to really convey that message. Though this comes back to Harry's immaturity in a way, because he doesn't understand fully the whole situation of Snape having to continue this lie and Snape having to continue to pretend like he's on the enemy's side. And so Snape does a very good job at hiding the fact that he understands what Harry's saying, but because Harry is not the smartest person in the world, doesn't understand what Snape's doing, so gets frustrated because Snape pretends like, I have no idea what that kid is talking about. He's being stupid. And Harry foolishly is like, dude, what the heck? You understand what I'm trying to say? And gets angry and is just an idiot.
That's a direct quote, by the way. Dude, what the heck?
Yeah. Page 753.
Yes, that's definitely
a of book. Our book.
Look it up.
That we are writing.
Look
it's
it up.
The transcribed Order of the Phoenix.
Yes.
Anyway, I do think that's an interesting point, especially, you know, his inability to... That is, like, seriously a moment of adolescence. I think a lot of, in the book, you think, you know, Harry's kind of a grown-up. You know, not all the time, certainly.
Okay.
You know, shout out to Cho Chang. But...
Ciao.
Oh my gosh.
I do think that's really is interesting. It shows his immaturity that, you know, for a second he breaks and he could have compromised
the whole thing.
The whole entire operation. I don't know if they call it operation. But the, you know, the whole situation where Snape is kind of a double agent for both sides, and really you don't know until the very last book. No spoilers.
Which leads off to a really good point of now Snape is living a three-sided personality. I don't know how you say it, but if you think about it,
tri-personality.
He's working.
Tri-personality. That's the scientific term.
Working for Dumbledore, who he's actually working for,
uh-huh.
And he's fake working for Umbridge and fake working for Voldemort.
That's true.
That's three times.
That is three different.
That's three personalities.
And I think honestly, I think he also maybe has a fourth one, and it could be directly linked to Dumbledore, but I think he's kind of half foot in, half foot out in terms of the Order of the Phoenix, because he doesn't trust anybody else in there. It's still another life. You know, he has that fight with Sirius. He's living another life to them, but his devotion rests solely in Dumbledore.
Yeah, I think it is kind of like, that kind of comes clear when Harry doesn't even realize that he thinks that he's in Hogwarts now that Dumbledore's gone and there's, like, nobody left. Professor McGonagall's gone, and he thinks, there's no one left from the Order, there's no one I can trust. And it's not until, like, the very last second that he's like, oh, yeah, my worst enemy, Snape, is actually on my side.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, like, a pretty good double secret agent.
That's telling of Snape.
Yeah.
You know, that he's, that even Harry, who's supposed to know that he's an ally, doesn't even think of him as a resource
right.
until the very last minute. Like, literally,
the last second.
Yeah. Interesting.
It is. So we're going to delve in deeper to, you know, the situation in which Harry essentially just tries to speak in code to Severus Snape. And I think it's interesting and important that we talk about the backside of that, how Snape responds, and that he pretends not to know, and then just leaves. Like, that's the end of it, you know. He says, he tries to speak to him, and, you know, they've got Padfoot in the place where it's hidden, and Umbridge asks what he means, and Snape says, no clue. I mean, not no clue, but this is essentially like, beats me, and then just, you know, bounces, which is significant to Snape's personality and his relationship to all these secrets, because you can definitely grasp throughout the book that I'd argue that Severus Snape probably has most of the secrets of both sides in his own capacity and probably doesn't share a great plethora of them. 10 vocabulary points to me. I'm interested. Thank you. I'm interested. Do you guys think that this moment where he, you know, just says, I don't know what you're talking about, and moves on, how do you think this plays into the relationship between Harry and Snape significantly, or specifically, not significantly, but also significantly?
I think that because Harry and Snape basically despise each other, that by Snape, you know, essentially pretending not to understand Harry, even though we know that he did, it's not hard for Harry to, like, disagree. Like, he sees that, and he's like, oh, my God, of course he hates me. Of course he doesn't know what I'm talking about. Like, he just, I think it makes it really easy for, to just kind of, like, leave Harry in the dark.
He's certainly deceitful, not only to Umbridge, which I guess was our last topic of subterfuge in the last segment, but also, you know, he's deceitful to Harry in sort of the same way, where Harry doesn't know whether or not he actually understood what he was saying.
Yeah, it wouldn't be hard to believe if Snape was just abandoning him in that moment, because, you know, he doesn't like Harry.
And just like a quick just question of interest for you guys, what do you think that says about Umbridge, that she just moves on so quickly once he slips out? You know, the second he leaves, she's not like, well, that was a weird encounter, and I don't know what to do about that. You know,
I think she could have, if she would have really thought a little deeper into the situation, she could have recognized that, like, Harry would not have screamed out this nonsense specifically to Snape unless it meant something.
Mm-hmm.
But when Snape is like, oh, Harry's crazy, bye, she's just like, oh, okay, whatever, so annoyed, moving on. You know, she could have looked a little deeper into it, and she would have been like, okay, this is suspicious.
I think she was too excited at the moment. I think excitement of the whole situation that she caught Harry and them, and was about to get what she wanted.
Excited is a good word.
Blinded her to what was going on.
Do you think this really excited her? I mean, like, just, I guess as a, this is me asking whether or not you think Umbridge is pure
as
evil.
As evil cat lady, yes.
Okay, I'm not, going to take it seriously. I'm going to move on because I'm not going to engage in such petty arguments.
I'm not saying
that
everybody's evil cat lady.
I was simply asking
Umbridge is evil
whether or not
cats, therefore, A plus B equals C.
Beyond the point. Beside the point entirely. Just ixnaying cats out of the equation.
Cats.
My question is to you guys, do you think that's, you know, do you think she really is pure evil? Like, I can't wait to use the Cruciatus curse on her.
100%.
I mean, that's a
she was saying,
curse.
Fudge doesn't have to know that I'm torturing people.
Yep.
And
she'll
he doesn't
know.
Have to know that I'm sending Dementors after 15-year-old
and
little kids.
Why, like, I get that the ministry is really against Harry and wanting to keep him quiet. Like, okay. But why is she taking it as, like, a personal vendetta? Like, she's almost acting like she's in charge and, like, it's her life on the line. Like, oh, my God, I have to shut Harry up forever. Like, she's going as far as to torturing him, possibly killing him in front of multiple people. Like, she has no shame.
Do you think it's overcompensation for her height?
Her toad face.
And her toad face. Ugh, what a weird adjective.
Toad
she
face.
Could be a relative of Hitler.
What?
Well, you never know. She's one to use a Cruciatus curse. She hates half-breeds. Hates anybody that is not a pureblood.
Is Umbridge a German?
I would say.
I mean,
under,
we don't know what date.
I was under the impression you had direct genealogy for this. I didn't realize we were just making assumptions based on personality choices.
I didn't have any direct genealogy.
Next thing you know, you're going to be saying that Hitler
saying,
was a cat person.
Like,
I
have no idea what the time frame is for this story, but it totally could have been going on during
early
World War
2000s,
II.
Late '90s.
And they are not related, so we're just going to move on.
They're
to
not
that
related.
Topic
I certainly agree. Maybe we can edit that out.
Interesting. So before we wrap things up with the last subterfuge topic, we want to throw out some rewards. So, Avery.
Yeah, I think we certainly have some awards to give out. I mean, just the evidence being presented officially that we got to deconstruct and just like little ramblings about the characters. Hashtag Hermione. So I think the first award that I think we should give out, and we're going to go ahead and do this live. It's organic. You know, this isn't pre-planned. We're deciding here and now who deserves these awards based on the evidence that we have presented today. So who do you guys think commits the most damaging subterfuge?
Umbridge.
Whoa.
Nice.
Incredible. Go ahead. Give your explanations.
Because like we said previously, it was literally page 747 of this huge book that we find out her master plan, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I'm the same way. That is just like the best subterfuge I've seen of the book and just in life in general of other stories that I've read. It's just a phenomenal use.
Okay.
I think it's great.
Wow.
I think she gets
it's incredible. I'll go ahead and say, I mean, have we got a yes from all of our judges?
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm more than happy to sign off on that.
Umbridge, gold medal.
We also have another category. We'd like to talk about who commits the most clever deceit throughout the book. Or at least in the evidence we presented on these three chapters today.
Hermione.
Yeah, that was pretty deceitful.
Yes, and very clever.
It was very clever.
Sharp wit.
I think they're all pretty much, like, it's pretty neck and neck.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone kind of played on everyone's strengths and weaknesses to pull their own deceit.
You know what? I think I'm going to counter you, because as Hermione was very quick-witted, I think...
Don't say Harry.
I'm not going to say Harry.
Voldemort.
Harry wins nothing in my book.
Thank you!
I'm going to throw out Snape. Because, you know, if we have to talk about somebody who's the most ominous presence, somebody who is, you know, he's, like I said, he's keeping secrets left and right for each side. And you never really know until the very end where he stands. I would argue that he commits the most clever deceit in this book, and that he still doesn't, in this chapter, he doesn't budge either way.
I think it has a lot to do with, like, his dark arts moodiness that he kind of portrays. Like, you know, he's so moody. Nobody really ever knows what he's thinking other than he seems mad.
He never grew out of the teenage angst phase.
Nope, he didn't.
Our very last award. I want to go ahead and say this is probably my favorite one. I wanted to ask, who do you guys think overall is the best at Sutterfuge? You know, not necessarily their actions in the book, but just in terms of consistency, who is the best at deceitfulness?
Dumbledore.
What a bold choice. That's a black horse because we didn't even talk about him, but a good point.
Well, for the people that have read the book or watched the movies, and if you haven't done either, then you can just turn off the podcast now. But
now at the very end.
At the end of the book.
An hour later.
At the end of the book, Dumbledore explains everything to Harry and explains everything from the past books and explains his whole actual real intentions for most of the stuff that he's done. And that's, I mean, he's used subterfuge literally for the whole 15 years of Harry's life, literally from the point where he was born. I mean, for when he was dropped off at the Dursley's house. And I mean, nobody knew what his real intentions were. I don't even think Professor McGonagall fully knew the extent of what he was thinking. And so I think that he continues to do it until he dies. Like, and I think that there's a lot of secrets.
We don't need to talk about his death right now.
I think there are a lot of secrets that aren't even revealed even after his death.
Yeah.
That have to do with, like, the Master Wand and, I mean, all kinds of stuff.
Spoilers.
Lots of spoilers.
Lots of spoilers to come.
Dumbledore dies.
Spoilers.
Oh, my God, my heart.
How dare you?
He dies.
Stop it.
Just stop it. Don't even say it one more time.
Guys. Can I bring in an award, like, just out of nowhere?
Just black horse it.
Okay.
Yeah, okay,
go ahead. Okay, so Dauntless. So, okay, so someone showing
Dauntless.
Fearlessness and determination. Who, in
definitely
the whole
Harry.
Book, or in these four chapters, who shows, like, the most dauntless behavior?
Can I step out on a limb here?
Step
Do
out.
It. Be careful.
I might fall.
Hold
tree.
On, girl.
I might fall off the tree. And this is crossing a line. If I've gone
Cross
too far,
it.
y'all can
We're
shove
adults.
Me back in that tree trunk.
We can move the line up a little.
I would venture to say that Umbridge is the most dauntless, and here's why. I'm not promoting Umbridge. Clearly, we have a very tough crowd.
This is
about
kind of hate
Umbridge.
Speech if you think about it.
Yeah.
But it sure sounds like it. But throughout the book, you know, she's constantly stepping out on a limb, stepping out on a limb. And while she sometimes does have Cornelius's approval, sometimes she doesn't.
That's so true.
Like, she threatens him with the Cruciatus Curse, which is, like,
and
incredibly
it's
significant.
In the book, where, what's the janitor's name?
Filch. That's the name.
Where Filch has been talking about whipping students.
And she's all for it.
Uh-huh.
Yes. There are many times where she is like, okay, well, I think she's probably got a superiority complex in that she's like, I am the law, therefore I am above the law. And, you know, often it goes unchecked, so we don't think about her being specifically dauntless, but she really is.
Yeah, and even when you think about how when she gave Harry detention and she was having him, like, cut into his hand, basically. I mean, that was pretty risky considering, like, if Dumbledore had found out, like, I don't know, I feel like there could have been repercussions,
no,
but this was her just doing her thing.
Yes, you're right. She's real risky.
She's real risky.
She doesn't, maybe she's a little Gryffindor at heart, too.
Oh, God.
Half
Slytherin, half Gryffindor. Half Voldemort.
No Hufflepuff.
No Hufflepuff or
Ravenclaw. The ingredients of an Umbridge. Yeah.
So the last bit of subterfuge for this chapter segment is that we found is when Hermione lies to Umbridge. And we're back again in Umbridge's office. We haven't really gone anywhere. This is right after Snape leaves, and Umbridge is about to use a torture spell on Harry to get him to talk. And so Hermione, the smart one, thinks very quickly of a way to both save Harry and to get rid of Umbridge. This is where Hermione's like, no, stop, we'll have to tell her. It doesn't matter, she's going to find out anyways. And this avoids Harry being tortured. And immediately Umbridge's focus turns from Harry to Hermione. And Hermione, through a series of sentences and talking, convinces Umbridge to go down to the woods with only Hermione and Harry, which is a great... she uses great influence on her. And I'm very surprised at how well Hermione's able to work all this out. So Hermione's leading Umbridge into the woods with the promise of Dumbledore's secret weapon, but instead they're met with danger. They're met with the centaurs, and this was intentional because Hermione knew they would be out there, and Hermione knew that the chance of her and Harry living were very high because centaurs aren't supposed to harm children, but for Umbridge it would be very low because centaurs can harm adults. And this, it works perfectly because this does happen. The centaurs do show up. There is a little bit of contention where Hermione and Harry almost do end up getting taken with Umbridge, but the giant Grop comes in at the last minute and causes chaos. And that is how Hermione and Harry are able to escape. Yeah. What do y'all think?
I think that was, like, pretty on-the-spot thinking for Hermione, and also really risky, considering she's, like, you know, usually pretty cautious. But she also played on Umbridge's, I don't know what you want to call it, quirks. She knew that Umbridge would be extremely enticed by this comment. So, yeah, I think that was pretty smart thinking for Hermione.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering... I don't think it says anywhere in the book directly whether or not Hermione intended for what happened to happen. I think she was, you know, the implication is that she was leading them to Grawp. But, you know, when she's taken by the centaur, she doesn't really say whether or not the intention was for
I don't think she mentions her intention at all.
But at the same time...
She does when they're there. She says, like... So Harry notices on their, like, walk there that mm-hmm. they're not going in the direction of Grawp. So he instantly is like, what's the plan? What's the plan?
Yeah.
He's like, this is not the same way. And then that's when the centaurs come out and he realizes, okay, was this her plan the whole time? And then Hermione tells the centaurs, we were not on her side, but we knew that you guys would help get rid of her.
Wow.
So that's kind of like her confession to them, I guess.
So she really did. Plan it. That's incredible improvisation on Hermione's part.
Because remember in like previous chapters, the centaurs made it very clear that they wouldn't hurt children, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she kind of knew like this was their safety zone. Like they could get away, but Umbridge was like dead meat.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely an interesting point. Especially, I do like what you said. I don't think Hermione, you're right. Like this whole book, no offense, I love Hermione. We're going to have a second podcast about her.
Team Hermione.
But she really is just being a mom. This whole book does not stop with the advice and the, you know, oh, and you should do this and probably do this. And hey, here's a planner. Which, it's a lot is what I'm trying to say. And then suddenly to throw a caution to the wind like that and be like, listen, I probably have something in the woods for you if you'll just like follow me.
Right. She definitely put herself on the line for that one. But that just shows how much she really cares about Harry, I'd say. You know, she obviously was worried about him.
So I think it shows how much she's changed. Because if you think about it, how many books are we into this now?
Four.
This is the fifth book. So in the first book, if this has happened, she would have not she wouldn't have been able to think this quick or be as willing to break the rules. Because I feel like back in the day when she first got to school, even if Umbridge had taken over then, she would follow the rules because she was such a rule follower,
right?
And the whole situation probably would have been entirely different. And I think this kind of shows like how much she's changed from being such a rule follower to someone that is now willing to break the rules for the greater good.
Yeah, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, she really does do that a lot in this book, where I was thinking she was being super cautious, but she is the one who
Dumbledore's army.
Right. And doesn't she say in the book, she's like, I'm feeling a little rebellious.
And doesn't she suggest the name Dumbledore's army? Was that her?
I think that was Harry.
Oh.
It might have been.
Okay, but she put the spell on everyone's name who joins that they would, was kind of crazy. Didn't see that coming.
She's definitely got a lot of ideas that I think really her Gryffindor is showing. She's a little impulsive.
Yeah, she's getting in this book. She's getting very edgy.
Yeah, she's, you know, and in previous books you see her, you know, plan things. But when it comes to execution, usually she's like, maybe we should think this through again. Maybe we should... You know, but there are multiple times in this book where she really does stick out her neck for what she believes is the greater good. Now, whether or not that is, it's a whole different podcast.
Yeah. Right on. Well, I think that wraps it up. Thank you for listening to Muggle Musings, the podcast. We will hope to see you next time. Talk to you later.
This is your final chance to hold the one you love. You know, man.